Before we start today's episode, I'd like to thank everyone who has listened to or shared our podcast. As of now, we've had almost 3,000 total listens. Our goal from the beginning has been to work towards making Reimagining Soviet Georgia more than just a podcast, but instead a multifaceted, multi-platform project that focuses on Soviet history to better understand the post-Soviet condition. We believe that Georgia and the South Caucasus are useful starting points for critical questions about the history and relevance of the Soviet experience today. But in order for us to consistently produce content and do even more, we need your help. We've started a Patreon page at patreon.com/reimagining Soviet Georgia. If you can sign up to be a patron of the show, we can continue to do what we are doing and do even more. While we are committed to providing all of our content for free, always, your contributions, however small, will allow us to do more with consistency and frequency. This is not a job for us, but a labor of love. But producing our episodes is costly and takes time. More, we are hoping to expand the scope of the project to begin acquiring oral histories, produce more in-depth audio documentaries, begin translations, engage in more original research, throw events, moderate discussions, and much more. We believe that with a bit of support, we can begin to professionalize and expand the project in new and exciting ways. The possibilities are endless, and with even just a minimal monthly donation, we can start to do new and exciting things. Just $5 or $10 a month can go a long way. And now, on with the show. My name is Brian Gigantino. Welcome to Reimagining Soviet Georgia. On today's episode, I sat down with Georgia-based writer and researcher Katie Sartania. In April of this year, Katie wrote an excellent article entitled Struggle and Sacrifice, Narratives of Georgia's Modern History, which critically interrogates the role of Georgian nationalism and independence in the post-Soviet period and how narratives of independence politically overshadow pressing social concerns in the country. We discuss not only her article and the legacies of Georgian nationalism, but also what it means to do historical research in Georgia today and the ways that the pressures of nationalism can come into conflict with critical historical inquiry. Katie, just tell me a little bit about what you research.
I'm a researcher, freelance researcher, for more than 5 years already, and what I research is mostly social issues like homelessness in Georgia and internally displaced persons, people, IDPs, and socially vulnerable groups in Georgia. And also what I do is time to time I write articles about history, the modern history of Georgia, and this is it.
What are some recent articles that you have written?
The recent article is about Georgia's modern history, the main narratives that the country has since independence. And in short, the title of the article is Struggle and Sacrifice. And this was published in April this year. But I was working on this article for more than 6 months, so I had enough time. But the history was very interesting, but also hard to write, because talking about history is easy, but writing is a little bit hard.
What's the hardest thing about writing about Georgia's national history, or why was that so difficult?
It is difficult to write about Georgia's history because you have things that people are celebrating. Then the history is also full of tragedies, because people are happy to celebrate this kind of events because they think that they achieved this independence through the tragedies and through the wars. And it was really challenging for me as a Georgian, but also as a researcher, because just to understand why people think that it is good to die for something, because maybe there is another way to achieve the independence or to develop the country. And I still have this question.
Actually, I'm curious about something you just said. The tension between being a Georgian and being a researcher. What is that tension? What is that tension like for you, I guess?
Yeah, I did not know about this tension before I started to think about history of Georgia, because I knew about history what I knew from public school or from media or just from the society. And when I started to research in 2019, it was the article about April 9, 1989, then just one day everything changed for me, because I had different information and different story about this event and this date. But since I started to read newspapers and articles and I asked people what happened that day, then I noticed that people are telling different things, but the public knows, the public know different story, and also the politicians and media are telling absolutely different story about this event. And then I followed this logic, and I saw that we have many different stories about one event, but in public we are trying to celebrate everything and even tragedies, and the April 9th is a very good example of this.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about April 9th. What was it, and why is it important? And also, in your research, what were some of these different narratives that you came across, that you saw, these different perspectives and ways of telling it?
I can say what I knew before, because it is important then to see the difference after the research. I knew that April 9 happened because Georgia wanted to regain its independence from Soviet Union and from Russia too, even from Russian Empire. And we started to protest on Rustaveli Avenue, and then the Russian army or the Soviet army came, and so 21 people died because they were protesting Russia's policy or Soviet policy. I don't know, we mix these two words sometimes. And when I started to research this, I saw that the events of April 9 started earlier, but that year, 1989, the April 9 started on April 4 because of Abkhazia. And when we talk about April 9 today, we don't mention this. Some people even don't know this, even people who were at this protest that time. And my generation or younger generation has no idea about this, that it started from Abkhazia.
Yeah, and what is the connection between April 9th and Abkhazia?
In Abkhazia, there was some tensions too. People were protesting things, and Tbilisi knew that they wanted independence. They wanted to be independent from Georgia too, but the National Liberation Movement leaders also, Gamsa Khurdia and Merab Kostava, they started to support from Tbilisi Georgians in Abkhazia. So they were saying that we're gathering here in front of the parliament because we want Abkhazia to stay in Georgia. But then everything changed because people went to Abkhazia, some leaders, if I remember correctly, Merab Kostava too, but I'm not sure. And Then things changed, and from 7th of April in Tbilisi, the main motto, main slogan was that we want independence and independence, and Abkhazia disappeared from this event. But it's okay if that happens. So my question is that why today we don't remember this? Even historians or politicians or people, just ordinary people, even researchers. And when I wrote this article, I get feedback from researchers too, that they were saying, oh, we didn't remember this. Was this, it was real that we started this event or this gathering because of Abkhazia? And this was surprising for me, because I knew, I thought that I am writing something that is very well known, but it turned out that I was not.
So people just didn't really know that this Abkhazia connection existed.
That's okay also if people don't know about this, but why don't ask questions about this history, what we know about the April 9? So we need to be more critical, and then I think that everything what we know about this history, we know just without any questions, we just take them as the truth, as a fact, and we don't ask any questions. So,
yeah, why do you think people don't know about the Abkhazia connection on April 9th? Why do you think that that's not something that's in the popular consciousness among not just Georgians, but researchers, people who focus on these questions?
Before the war started, before this April 9 or the war in Abkhazia, we have critical articles in the newspapers that historians or people who were elite at that time are talking about who are Abkhaz people. This is the title, one of the article, that even that time they had no idea who they were or what was Abkhazia in general. And it continues until now. But again, the question is that we have some people who are writing books, who are experts in this field, in conflicts, but still this is very unknown fact, and they have no questions about this, and yeah, I don't know. It is also a problem, I think, of academia, because in Georgia and especially in Tbilisi, we don't have such kind of thing. We just say this word, but it's very empty word here, because there is no real interest in research and understanding real history. And also I think people are afraid of researching some things, because also it is from my experience that when I was reading these newspapers and I had some ideas and I had some questions, I was scared too, because I was asking myself that what am I doing here, and it is a scary thing to do.
Do you feel pressure from forces, or?
I feel pressure from myself as a Georgian. And then I have also another pressure of as a researcher, because I want to write what I see and what I think. But then also I'm a citizen and I live here, and this is also another thing. And this is kind of a role conflict that I had, and I still have sometimes.
In other places, history ends up taking on a role of questioning the nation, or challenging narratives. You know, we can think about in the United States today, there's these also history wars that are going on, but, you know, questioning certain understandings of American history and the American past. And so I guess, do you think there are ways to to use history to question some of these things about Georgia's history and Georgia's recent past? Or do you think that that's not really possible because of this tension that you're talking about between being a Georgian and being a researcher?
I think that in future everything is possible, but right now what is happening is that I'm not a historian, right? But what I see and what I observe about historians is that they, most of them, they're nationalists, and this is a part of their identity, like as historians. And being historian means it's equal to be nationalist. And I asked this question to my colleagues too, and they agreed, because they think that it's coming from also from this 90s and when the war started. And sometimes I have heard that the war in Abkhazia was started by historians, because they started to write articles, and then people believed that yes, they were writing truth without questioning. So I think this is what is happening right now too, but it's not just about historians. I think every field in Georgia is almost in the same conditions that even the academia, what we have, or the universities, are not questioning the reality or the information or the narratives they are seeing, or they even speak or talk about these narratives. And sometimes it's really hard to distinguish your thoughts and the narratives, and even manipulation is very similar, and you think that, oh yes, this is what I think, this is just my opinion, but it's not.
What do you mean by manipulation?
By manipulation, I mean that when we have these dates, like even April 9 or May 26, when Georgia is celebrating its independence, then we don't speak. Even this anniversary of 100 years of this first republic, right? I had no idea about this event, and I just saw the commercials in Metro or in the public, and we just celebrated this date without knowing anything about this this first republic. And I think everything is similar, and I call it manipulation, because I should, as a citizen, I should know something to celebrate. I should know what I'm celebrating, or what I'm calling tragedy, this April 9. And this is what I mean by manipulation, because I'm forced to celebrate something. But then when I analyze, or when I think about this critically, I see that I have nothing to celebrate. Yes, independence, okay. But then you see the country's social and economic conditions, or people who live in a very bad conditions, and then it's hard to celebrate.
It seems like in Georgia today, nationhood, nationalism, and independence are the concern of politics, not the social and economic well-being of the citizens. And I'm asking, or I'm curious, what is the relationship between those two things? The obsession and the focus on nationhood and nationality, and the lack of focus on social and economic conditions of the citizens. Are those things related? Are they not related? Are they, you know, how do they relate or not?
Yeah, how I see, they are not related. They have no connection. I mean, in public, but we see in the public politics that they have no connection. We just have this independence and sovereignty and everything. We celebrate it, but we don't mention what this country has achieved in terms of citizens, or in terms of social and economic conditions or we don't have any achievements. We have some achievements maybe, but what we see also, the poverty is increasing and people still live very bad condition, and then people are leaving this country to live abroad in Europe or even in United States or in Turkey to work there, even illegally. And this is not a part of this independence history and politics. And this is why it's hard to connect them, because Georgian nationality is saying that the country and the citizens, Georgians, are survivors. They survived many things, war and this empires, and many things have changed in the world, but Georgia is still living and it's still independent country. But and when you hear this, you're really proud of this, that you achieved so many things and you're just still living, and you have your language, your own language, and I don't know, flag, and you have your writers, Georgian writers, and then other mythology that we have also in relation with religion and everything. And when you hear or think about this, then you forget, or you just don't want to talk about the poverty and collapse of economy and what we have. Even IDPs and even these homeless people who lost their place and home and I don't know, everything, and are still citizens, but they are not included in this celebration and independent history.
What are the conditions of IDPs in Georgia today, internally displaced persons?
The conditions are very different, because we have two waves of IDPs, one from 1993 and then another one from 2008, from Abkhazia and from South Ossetia. And they have different social and economic conditions, because people from war 2008, they have some place to live. The government built their homes or the place, the villages near Tbilisi. But the people from Abkhazia, they are still living in former schools or public schools or hospitals. And the government is saying that they are trying everything and they do everything to work on their housing policy, but they still live there, most of them. And they are also isolated from the society, and integration is also a very big issue. But it's a very complex story also, because these people still think that they will go to Abkhazia and live there, but they also try to find place and work outside of Abkhazia in Georgia.
Yeah, I was asking about this IDP situation because I know, you know, in the neighboring countries, in Armenia and Azerbaijan, that this IDP situation was so important to the way that their nationalisms in relation to each other kind of function. Like, you know, in Azerbaijan, for example, the internally displaced persons from these regions that surround Nagorno-Karabakh, 700,000, 600,000 of them, you know, were very important to the Azerbaijani regime's justification mm-hmm. of, you know, waging this war against Armenia to try to reclaim them, and resettling them is like really important for how the nation is imagined there. But I can't tell, I guess, in Georgia, if the Georgian state uses the IDPs to the same degree to reproduce its own, you know, national narrative with Abkhazia. Does it or does it not? I can't really tell.
Because in Georgia, it's a different story with IDPs. Georgia lost the war, and the IDPs are the face of this. This is why I think that the IDPs are not that important in terms of the politics, but they are important in terms of to gain this international aid, humanitarian aid. But in terms of politics, like, Georgia is not proud of its IDPs because they are the face of this.
The defeat.
Yes.
The loss of the war. I guess another topic I want to bring up is the birth of the national movement and the rise in the early 90s, or I should say the late 80s, early 90s, of Zviad Gamzahurdia, and then his lasting presence in Georgian politics. Because, you know, when I was looking at your article too, you know, you have these numbers today in 2021 about the popularity of Zviad Gamzahurdia, you know, but at the same time, by all, you know, definition of, if we were to define his politics, he's some kind of far-right fascist nationalist. I'll say it. He's a, you know, fascist, in my opinion. Yet he retains this popularity in Georgia today. And so on one hand, I'm curious, like, why is he still so popular in Georgia today? Somebody with far-right nationalist politics, you know, somebody who, you know, popularized this rallying cry, Georgia for the Georgians.
I think this is a very simple question in Georgia, because his biography is also telling that he was a son of a writer, the very popular and even classic Georgian writer, Constantine Gamzahurdia. And then he was a dissident also. He was in prison in Soviet, during the Soviet Union, and this is also one important thing in his like in his biography. And then the independence, people connect this independence, this regaining independence, to his name because of what he did, not just because the Gamzahurdia gained this independence and without him we could not do this, but just because what he did in April 9, but 2 years later, after this 1989, on this day, but 2 years later, he was celebrating this day, and also the referendum that was held in Georgia was on his birthday. It was 31st March, and everything is connected to his name, and history remembers him as a person who was important person in this gaining independence. But also the story continues, because this Edward Shevardnadze, who was a president after him, and one thing, Zviad Gamzahurdia was the first president of Georgia, but he was the first and last president of Georgia, and at that time Georgia was the whole, like, Abkhazia and South Ossetia was the part of Georgia. After Gamzahurdia, every president or every leader of Georgia had this crisis of legitimacy, because people, they had this electoral legitimacy, but public were not giving them this legitimacy just in elections, but Gamzahurdia was different from them.
Well, one of the ways that they were, that there was a connection between Saakashvili and Gamzahurdia, was the fact that Saakashvili tried to, you know, re-legitimize Gamzahurdia after maybe he was delegitimized with the return of Shevardnadze to Georgia. And I'm curious, you know, do you think that there was a role that the Saakashvili era played in re-legitimizing Gamzahurdia? or do you see, and then another question is that when we think about how the Georgian nationalism changed in the post-Soviet era, you know, it seems like Gamsakhurdia was like an extreme ethno-nationalist, Shevardnadze a nationalist but not so extreme, and then Saakashvili came back with a new redesigned extreme nationalism. And I guess I'm trying to figure out, I don't have the answer, I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, is it appropriate to think about this Saakashvili version of nationalism as a continuation of something that Gamsakhurdia started, or is it a totally different direction that Georgia took?
I think it's different, but Saakashvili used Gamsakhurdia and this nationalism from 90s to legitimize himself. And even this, his political party's name, right? United National Movement is similar to what we call Eronuli Mudzraoba, National Liberation Movement. Also there is one important thing that is not researched well, but I still believe in this version of the story, that before the Rose Revolution, Saakashvili went to west part of Georgia, where the Samegrelo is, and where Gamsakhurdia spent his last days. And he started to, he went there and he came to Tbilisi with these people from Samegrelo. And also one of my colleague told me that Samegrelo is one of the biggest part of Georgia where people are pro Gamsakhurdia. So in terms of elections, this was also one very important step from Saakashvili. And I believe in this version of story that he just planned this, or he just used this name of Gamsakhurdia and also Samegrelo against Shevardnadze too, because Saakashvili's motto or slogan before the election was, before the Rose Revolution, was Georgia without Shevardnadze. And also people in west part of Georgia don't like Shevardnadze and it has its reasons, and I think it's a very interesting conspiracy or a version of or interpretation, I would say. But Saakashvili's nationalism was also different in terms of he modernized somehow this nationalism from 90s, and people believed that it was something, his policy was European and not nationalism, because we, at that time, I remember that we never said that he was a nationalist. It started after he resigned, and only after this we started to understand that it was a nationalism that he was he was talking about. Or
this is very interesting, though. Yeah. So, how would you say people then understood Saakashvili while he was in power? If he wasn't considered a nationalist, right? Because now I feel like everybody talks about him in this terms of him being this very extreme nationalist. You know, he maybe helped rewrite a version of national understanding in Georgia, but I think he's across the board thought about as some kind of nationalist. So at the time, how did people imagine him in your understanding?
Yeah, as a person who grew up in this society, I would say that I was at school when he was a president, and I had the feeling, and people around me were talking, that Georgia is trying to modernize and going in directions of Europe, and it's everything is changing. And it, we never, I have never heard the word nationalism at that time. It was all about modernism and how we're achieving things, and the economy is growing, and Europe, and we're joining this European Union, and this kind of things, which was exciting, and nobody was talking about nationalism.
The current regime, the Georgian Dream, is often framed by the opposition as being this anti-national force, you know? They're Soviet, they're Russian, but then when you look at their policies, they're totally pro-NATO, they're totally pro-European Union, they've deepened relations with the United States, they've deepened relations with the European Union, and so to me it seems like this post-Saakashvili regime has basically continued almost all of the policies, most of the policies, especially in relation to the nation and nationhood and national sovereignty and all those questions. Maybe slight differences, almost negligible though, on social and economic questions, but pretty much the same. And so I'm curious, like, what do you think about that, you know, this the way in which, like, the maybe sometimes the opposition talk, like, not to say that the government in power is somehow good, it's not my point, but it's more clearly not. My point is to say that sometimes they get accused of being this, you know, anti-Georgian, anti-national thing, yet at the same time they've very clearly maintained the national policies of the previous government. And so why does that happen, and what does that, I guess, mean for Georgian nationalism?
I think without nationalism, today you cannot do anything in politics. Like, if one wants to establish a political party without nationalism, it's really hard to gain this popularity. So nationalism is main political ideology that political parties in Georgia need in terms of popularity. But also the other issues that you said, the relations with Europe and NATO and the United States, it's also very important, because without it, people would think that Georgia is changing its direction in terms of, like, this is why they are accusing that if rhetoric is changing of this ruling party, then people think that Georgia is going Russia's direction, but everything is remaining the same since Shevardnadze, like this political orientation of the country and even the economy, and it's still from Gamsakhurdia's time, because when Georgia gained its independence, every single political party or leaders were saying that, oh, we want this free market economy and democracy, and nothing has changed. And nobody is asking questions what we achieved in terms of free market and in terms of a democracy, right? And every single political party is saying that we have this same things, we want the same. And what is the difference between them? They are calling each other the same names, like they are anti-Georgian, or they are pro-Russian, or they are Soviet, and they use these words just to demonize each other, just to make each other in public, like, worse, and to make themselves as true nationalist people who are continuing this way of Gamsakhurdia, even Georgian Dream, and leader of their ruling party. Ivanishvili was saying the same when he visited Gamsakhurdia's village where he died. So they are quite similar, in terms of these main policies and politics. And what we observe here in Georgia is that just the names and parties are changing, but the reality is like still the same. And also one difference between them is also rhetorics, what they say and how they speak. During Saakashvili's time, they were talking about this Europeanization or joining the NATO or the United States, the relations with the United States. Today we don't hear much of this, but every single statement from the representatives of ruling party are the same. They are also saying the same. So maybe the propaganda is less.
You know, one of the things that we try to focus on in this project, not the only thing, but one of, is the way that memory politics are used, the way that history is used, and in particular in Georgia's context, this Soviet story. Because in my own exploration of the history and the topic, Georgia is an interesting case where so many people tell you, well, the Soviet Union was better, but also frame national idea in Georgia in relation to the USSR, distance from it, independence. So they hold these two things. Materially, the Soviet Union was far better. But this ideal of nationalism and an anti-Soviet nationalism is important. And then, of course, I've had so many experiences where then I start to talk to somebody, and by the end of the conversation, well, yeah, sure, the Soviet Union was better. I guess it wasn't that bad. And I guess they are liars and crooks now, too. You know, so they don't actually even justify or believe their own critiques of the Soviet Union. It's very strange. And so I guess in your own explorations of nationalism, what do you make of this role that the Soviet Union plays in shaping Georgian national consciousness, both in a historical way, right, going back to the 1956 demonstrations of Stalin, but also in a contemporary ideological way, you know? It's kind of like, you know, when people start framing politicians as being Soviet or communists, and that's just a way to say that they're bad. You know, what do you think about this role that the Soviet Union plays in contemporary Georgian politics, contemporary Georgian ideas of the nation?
I think Soviet Union has very important role in this, because my question is that where this nationalism coming from? And many historians also say, and I agree with them, that it's coming from Soviet Union to our nationalism, because it was born there. It was formed there, and then it just changed its form. But when we speak about politicians and in the public, how people use the Soviet Union and even in the memory politics, then it's different, because people use this word and this time frame of Soviet Union that when they don't like someone, don't like something, or just want to demonize something. And I think this started during the Saakashvili presidency time, when he was a president. People started to somehow reimagine Soviet Georgia, but in a different way. And it still continues until now, that people still use this frame of Soviet Union and nationalism, and as if they contradict each other. But I don't think it's different. Like,
what do you mean? What do you mean?
I mean that the Georgian nationalism was born in the Soviet Union, and the people, the leaders also was, they were born during this time and they have no experience they had no experience outside of Soviet Union, and I think this is very important to understand Georgian nationalism even post-Soviet Georgia. And also when we still don't have this like academia and strong researchers and strong school of historians, it's very easy to use the history of Soviet Union in a fragmented way, because when you speak with people, and mostly young generation, they understand Soviet Union as just one thing, just Stalin or just Lenin or just the Gorbachev or just Khrushchev, and it was, yeah, Soviet Union had also different colors and shapes and shades, I don't know, and it's important when we speak about Soviet Union, we should mention what we mean by this or what time we are talking about and everything. But in public and in popular language, so being Soviet or being like Soviet person means that you're old-fashioned and you are not pro-European or something, and this creates a very big conflict, and which has very negative impact on the even daily life of people and social groups and even politics, because people see each other as enemies because of their perceptions or understanding, or even because of their knowledge, because we don't have much knowledge about Soviet Union. My experience was also that when I was saying the words Soviet Georgia in Georgian, Sabchota Sakartvelo, it sounds very, very, how to say, it very strange to me too, because it's not a Soviet Georgia, it was just Georgia. And it was Soviet Union, and it's also very my personal experience that when I was writing this word Soviet Georgia, it was kind of strange, because such thing does not exist as Soviet Georgia.
You said something, so something I've been interested in is the way that in the political discourse in Georgia that population will be demarcated into those who are young and progressive and liberal and, you know, European looking versus a quote unquote backward, regressive, uneducated, pro-Russian Soviet person, you know, and that this line not only is not true, but totally misses any nuance of what the Soviet period in Georgia was, why somebody might think it was better, what could be learned from this Soviet experience, because nobody's saying it's going to come back, and nobody argues that, not even, you know, not even communists even think that that's going to come back, but there is a question of, you know, what was positive about this experience in the Soviet Union, and why would somebody think that that was a better time? And I think that that idea gets erased because it's a threatening idea to market reforms, to ideas of nationhood that is trying to integrate with a European community that is based on demonizing the communist past. And I'm personally like, see that this demonization of the older Soviet generation has a direct political implication. You know, it's not that these people are backwards, that's ridiculous. No, these are people who lost. You know, these are people who have not benefited from Europeanization, quote unquote, Westernization, and the rise of markets. And the minute that the political class has to deal with that, or you know, they have to really come to terms with that, it starts to threaten certain assumptions of progress, of development, you know, nation building that they've invested everything into.
Maybe you're right, but I don't think that we discuss this that much, that we know what we mean behind this. Because when we say that we don't want to go back to the USSR, or when we say that we want the European Union, I don't think that the Georgian general public is discussing what is behind this, that if we join the European Union, what we will gain, what is the benefit that the Georgian society will have, or this is the same with the Soviet Union, because we don't discuss much what we lost or what we gained after this. This is why independence is very important and very strong word, but empty at the same time, because we don't talk much about the people who lost their jobs or their career or their home, or they are forced to leave the country to work as illegal workers or even legal workers. They are forced to leave country, and the older generation is also very, they don't have much space to speak about their experience and how they felt after this, when they lost everything, like fabrics or the factories were stopped working and they just were unemployed. And there's
like, you've seen this documentary of these women in Poti, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What did you think about that documentary?
The documentary is about women who were working during the Soviet time. They were working factory workers, and they just had their lives, their work, their job, and their career, because they knew that they will work there. But when the Soviet Union collapsed, the factories also factories stopped working, and they became unemployed, and then they started to find job, and they left the country. And some of them are still unemployed and still live here, but most of them started working in the United States or in Europe as a care worker, and they still play a big role in this country, because they send money to actually feed their home, to feed their family, and also to this country, to the country's budget. They have big share there. But these people, we don't see in politics that they are discussed, that their issues are discussed. I don't remember the title of this documentary.
I just remember
Women from Somewhere or something.
Yeah.
But it is a story that nobody is talking about this, and I also watched this documentary as something, as a movie, and not the reality. And this is very important thing, that because people tell the stories, and everybody knows that in almost every second family we have this kind of women who left, who lost their job, or who did not have any education because of this war and everything since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And then they left this country to work and send money back to home, to their families. But this is kind of a norm that we are creating, even society, not just only politicians and political parties, but also the society and the family members also. It is, this is like it should be like this. Yes, they should work there and send money, and we should not say anything to the government that please bring our family members back to our families. So
how can history help, you know, better understand and have a more clear approach to these social needs? And what specifically in Georgian history can be used? Because today you look around and there's all this history about the nation. There's all this history about the nation. But, and with the anti-Soviet rhetoric, there's like a rejection of working people, of the common person, of their struggles in the discourses, in the rhetoric, in the way that politics are understood. So what can people, how can people, you know, reclaim histories to start, you know, thinking through, fighting for, and pushing for the kinds of changes to correct and better these social problems?
I can tell you my personal example, because when I started to work on this social issues, it was 2014 when I was a student and I started to work on homeless people. I was I had discussions with them. I was just recording their stories, and I was thinking that they were just people who lost home and who lost their property, and that's it. It's their fault. It's a single story that they have, and yes, government should help, but they also should do something to find a job or to, I don't know, buy an apartment or place. And I was thinking like this, that the social issues, even homelessness or unemployment or the poverty, is different, and the country and this country's policies and the history and everything is like different thing. But when I started to connect them, I saw where the problems are coming from and why these are not the single stories and why these people have these problems. And it's not, their problems cannot be solved just from social programs that government will fund them and they can buy place or they can start work, and the problem will not be solved. Like, social problems cannot be solved this way, because everything is connected to this history when it started in the 90s and how this distribution started of wealth and everything. So I think that the example of Georgia is very important in terms of understanding social problems, and history is not not different things. Like, this is a one story, and if one wants to understand the history of this country, then this person should look at the social problems of this country, and vice versa. If you want to understand why this country has this much social problems and even economic problems, then you should go back to history and read the history of this country, where it started and why it's continuing until now. So this is my experience, that history helped me to understand why we have so much problems in terms of social and economic conditions of this country and people, the society. Zogi akedidobashi, zogi akedidobashi, zogi akedidobashi. Yisrael bimelad reba.